Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
Welcome, gentle listener, to episode 213 of Smart Enough to Know Better.
We're a podcast of science
and comedy
and ignorance.
I'm Dan Beeston.
And I'm Gregoire.
And in this episode, I gotta move some ice, if you know what I mean.
And it's going to be a dance, dance, brain revolution.
Then I'll try to stop you from poisoning yourself.
But Dan, how has been your week in science?
Gregoire, I need to make a real strong building. Like, real strong. So I've chosen a building material. Can you guess what it is?
Mud brick.
It is not mud brick. I need strong, Gregoire. Really strong.
Concrete or rebarred concrete or something. Poured concrete with...
No. I need really strong, Gregoire. I've picked styrofoam. Okay, I'm not making a building yet, but there's a property in my neighborhood who have recently built a home. It's a wood frame building on a concrete slab, but they had this delivery of these massive foam blocks. And I wasn't sure if that was some sort of mold for concrete pouring, but it turns out that these were a styrofoam product called geofoam.
Right.
So geofoam is a void space product. Instead of filling a hole or cavity with like old tires or rocks or soil, you can put a big slab of styrofoam in there. Styrofoam feels pretty easy to destroy. You can snap it in half. You can tear chunks off it. But the one thing it's really hard to do with dense styrofoam is crush it.
Oh.
The geofoam can support the weight of a big old human being and they won't even leave a footprint.
Wow.
Like you could even hit one of these with a sledgehammer and there will be no indentation.
Okay. It's obviously not, it's very, very densely packed styrofoam.
It's very dense styrofoam.
Oh, okay.
But if you've got styrofoam, like if you had a fridge delivered or something, that styrofoam, you could stand on top of it and it doesn't really give.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's sure. If you can stack it up, you'll just, in that case, you would put an indent, but yes, you're not going to sink into it like quicksand or something like that.
Yeah. So you can lay like a thin bottom slab of concrete, put a couple of layers of foam bricks on top, and then a thin slab of concrete over the top, and you get like a huge slab with not much concrete.
Mm.
It's incredibly strong. It's water resistant. It resists lateral movement.
Ooh.
It's cheap to manufacture and transport. In fact, the ones that were near our place, there was a wind while after they delivered it, and a bunch of them just wandered up the street.
Now they belong to you.
Yeah.
It's like the high seas piracy, styrofoam piracy.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know,
it's on my property.
It was floatsome.
Yeah.
On the jet streamsome. Anyway.
It is a great insulator. Your home heating isn't heating up an enormous block of concrete that then wicks the heat away into the earth. You keep it all trapped inside the house.
Is that great in Queensland? Is that good in Queensland?
Well, if you also with the coal, maybe. Oh, actually, that's a good question because the ground underneath your house is generally cooler, so you kind of do want to wick cold up into
I don't know. Ooh.
Oh, that hadn't occurred to me. Oh, you're right about that. But in colder places, you like keep all the heat in your house. All these people, they insulate the walls and the ceiling, but then they've got this whole side of the cube is like emptying heat out into the planet.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to have insulation to stop heat getting in. I guess styrofoam will stop heat getting in as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's hot, you have a really hot ground, it's not going to radiate into your house.
That's insulation, baby.
Yeah. That's how.
Build on lava. So I've seen photos of someone who's holding one side of like an inch thick piece of this geofoam and the other person has like a blowtorch on the other side and they can't feel it.
Sure.
You can even use this stuff in large engineering products. So you dig out a big flat surface and then you pile the blocks and then you put a concrete barrier on the outside and the top. When there's a lot of weight on top and your fill is just rocks and soil, that weight can turn that rocks and soil into liquid.
Yeah, we look at dams or weirs and that sort of stuff. You've got to have a retaining wall. So you have to have something that goes into the ground to stop the lateral motion from happening. I said it gets a bit liquefied or takes on a liquidy kind of effect.
Mm. Or you can just have a retaining wall on the outside that's very, very strong. Mm. But because it's liquid, it's going to push down. But as it pushes down, it's going to push out.
Yes.
Yep. But with this stuff, it pushes down and there's no lateral movement. So it doesn't want to, like, none of the energy gets moved sideways.
Yeah, so all the forces are basically straight down instead of pushing down, as you said, down and out.
Yeah, which means your retaining wall doesn't need to be anywhere near as strong.
Yeah.
There is also a building process that uses this geofoam for the walls, but kind of in a back-to-front way, where you build the walls like a big Lego set. You have these big foam Lego blocks that all slide into each other.
Right, okay.
And then you fill up the inside with concrete. So the outside of the wall is foam and insulated, and the concrete is like this huge thermal mass.
In my mind, that sounds like our bodies. You have flesh on the outside and a big hard skeleton on the inside. So just sort of giving a bit more structure on the inside, keeping you upright.
Yes, yes. So for a moment, I thought you meant we're bodies where you fill them up with concrete.
We haven't talked about that.
I thought we agreed not to talk about that on mic. The cool thing about these walls is it makes them very resistant to natural disasters. So if like a typhoon comes in, everyone else gets blown into matchsticks and these houses just stay solid.
Right. And so that you become the fourth little pig going,
yes,
stone, ha, nothing. I got a styrofoam house, bad wolf.
Oh, a house made of bricks. How quaint.
Yeah, that's right.
Mine's made of geofoam styrofoam filled with concrete. Bitch.
Is it poured? Can you like make a structure?
No, they got hooves.
Is the geofoam
little cloven hooves?
Yeah. Oh no, I got
no,
it.
No, not
I got
cloven it. Hooves on a pig, is it?
Because
that's why Jewish people aren't allowed to eat them, because they're only allowed to eat animals with cloven hooves.
Is it the other way around? No, I don't know. Now we're getting into a whole, what's kosher and what's not?
Like
I don't know.
Like a goat's got cloven hooves and that helps stick to a dam wall.
But you have cows. I don't know. Pigs have little toes. They have little cloven hooves where, I don't know.
Cow hoof.
Cows also have multiple. They have the two. They have the lateral and
they're cloven.
Non-lateral toe.
So what's, so what does a pig, pigs have trotters. That's a different thing.
Yeah, a different thing. Sure, that must be it.
You're not allowed to eat trotter.
That's right. No,
God says no.
God says no to trotters.
No trotter.
God just likes little things that trot. It's like, isn't it so cute? Look at the little piggy go with a little trotty. Don't you eat it. I love this creature.
I gave him a delightful curly tail and they still ate it?
That's right.
Monsters. I'm going to kill all their firstborn.
And I also made it taste a lot like them, and they still ate it. I made a terrible error here. Terrible error.
Oh, boy. But yes, nice strong houses, resistant to natural disasters.
Hang on, my question still stands. Is it liquid? Can you make a structure and then pour the geofoam into it, or is it made into in a factory as a very
It comes
dense
as a brick.
Thing? It comes as a brick. Okay, right.
I guess it's formed as a foam, and then it... solidifies?
The process that you can't pour it because it probably wouldn't be, my guess would be you wouldn't get the density and the strength if you just poured it as a liquid. It's probably a process that compresses it in when it's in liquid form.
Maybe.
It's probably something to do with the construction. Otherwise, it'd be easy to pour it because then you just go spray, spray, spray. And then like they do with insulation, you can spray insulation into a space and, you know, it just goops onto everything.
Yeah, it wouldn't take up as much room, you'd think.
Yeah, but spraying it probably has a lot of air in it because, you know, what you're doing is blasting it out a hose and that's not going to give you probably the strength. I am totally riffing here. I have no idea.
Yeah.
This is not my area, but I would,
Interesting idea.
It's in a brick, though, so that makes more sense.
Hmm. Certainly seems more fun to make it as just a big Lego project.
Can you carve them? Could you take a knife to them?
You can. In fact, that's how you get your electrics and your into the edge. You run just... It's because it's styrofoam. You just cut into the edge and you put your wires and your hoses in
so
there.
So if
and then plaster over the top.
If the fourth little pig looks out and sees the big bad wolf has got a katana, you could be in trouble at that point.
Well, the inside is concrete.
Oh, well, okay, that's fine.
I mean, if he could see it, then he's looking through a hole. So you'd want that to be a double glazed window.
Well, no, yes, very double glaze, very good for keeping out heat and angry wolves. Very well known.
It's a wolf star rating of 4. So you plaster over the top of it, with and put whatever you want on the outside so it doesn't have to look like anything particular. It's pretty much inert. Like, it doesn't leach chemicals. It's termite resistant because styrofoam tastes like shit. I'm not quite sure what happens in a flood. You probably want your foundations to have anchoring points. As I suspect in a flood, it would just float away.
As generally for everything. Yes. Foolish man builds his house upon the sand. And if that foolish man also wisely put driving piles deep into the sand, you're stuffed.
Well, so, my house didn't float away for the clever reason that we had a hole in the bottom of it. So all the water went out the hole.
Oh, nice. Well done. Well planned.
Let's go with that. Well planned. And so what happened to you this week in science, Gregoire?
Well, technically it didn't happen to me. This was from podcast friend Eloise. We're chatting together. I realized she was telling me something about memetics without realizing we were chatting about memetics. So
now, memetics is when you've got something really hard to remember, but you just remember a word and the first letter of each word is the thing, right?
Oh,
like your Roy G. Biv.
Oh, no. Maybe it is, but not what I'm talking about. In this case,
is that mnemonics?
Yeah, mnemonics. That's a mnemonic. Yes.
Memetics.
Yes. Memetic. Well, memes. The idea of the concept of genes pass information. Richard Dawkins said that, you know, genetics passes on physical information, but memetics, you're passing on.
Gipoffy. That's how you remember that. Genetics passes on.
So memetics passes on cultural information. So memes. So Richard Dawkins was the one who came up with the term memes, and now memes is a thing. Like, that's a thing. It's kind of gone off. I'm not talking
about. It's a bit
morphed. It's not what he was talking about originally. We're not discussing any of that. But Eloise took her son to the dentist, and the kid was getting checked up at the dentist, and the Bohemian Rhapsody was playing while they're at the dentist, and Eloise was distracting her son by, you know, he had, you know, people sticking things in his mouth by chatting to him with this music and like, oh, hey, listen to the song. And the kid said, oh, I know that song. What's that song? Like, he probably went, and Eloise went, oh, it's Bohemian Rhapsody. Cool. So they continued on. And then I'm going to ask you, Dan, what happens in Bohemian Rhapsody? Is there something that happens in Bohemian Rhapsody that you will do, like an action you will do if you hear Bohemian Rhapsody?
Do you realize that you've talked to me about this before on this podcast?
Yes, we have. And I will, and I know that as well.
So
that's where we go. Yes.
This is the head banging thing again.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Right? That's it. Once again. That's right. I just found it really interesting because shows in action. So it's the head banging.
Because it wouldn't be the first time you've brought the same story twice to the podcast.
This is true. Now, I did actually remember that. This is a in action story. So some of our listeners may know that for some reason, when the song goes da 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 da, you headbang. And Eloise said to her son, when that music came on, this is when we headbang. And the son kind of looked at her a bit weirdly because, you know, this is like a 10-year-old-ish. And more importantly, the dentist and the dental technician looked at her in the same way. And the dental technician turned and went, yes, we do headbang, but why do we headbang? Like, do you know why we headbang? So these dentists and dental technicians were in their 20s, maybe early 30s, but probably 20s, late 20s. And Eloise suddenly realized that this was cultural transmission that had happened.
No.
They knew that you had to headbang during Bohemian Rhapsody, but they had no clue why they headbanged because of Bohemian Rhapsody. It was just something that you do, a cultural thing that had passed down in Australia, maybe. I'm assuming not just Australia, but it's a thing. Our listeners will get in contact with us if they have in the past. So these 26, 30-somethings knew they had to headbang during Bohemian Rhapsody, but didn't know where it came from. And Eloise explained it comes from a movie called Wayne's World. Neither of them had heard of it. Neither the dentist nor the dental technician had heard of it. They had heard of Mike Myers. And so they were like, oh, yeah, I've heard of him. One went, I think I've heard of him. He's a comedian or something.
Big fans of Master of Identity?
Sure. Yes. That's a
No, sorry. That's the other one from Wayne's World. That's Dana Carvey.
Oh, there you go. Oh, see, it's even worse. So I just found this fascinating when you told the story, because this is a wonderful part of cultural transmission. This is the next step, which when I brought it up in the podcast before, it was the first step. We've all learnt to headbang due to Bohemian Rhapsody because of Wayne's World. But now the next generation has come, and some of them don't know why we do it. So that story, again, for those who don't know, it's an apocryphal story about chimps in a cage, and there's a ladder, and there's some fruit on the top of the ladder, but the naughty scientists electrify the ladder, so when the chimp touches it, they get a shock, and then in the end they shock the chimps so they know not to touch the ladder, and they slowly remove the chimps over time, and in the end all the original chimps have gone, and they stop electrifying
the ladder. There's just a room with a ladder and a banana. Well, that's science, ladies and gentlemen.
They swap out the chimps, and now the chimps are stopping other chimps from getting up the ladder, even though the ladder's not electrified, and none of those chimps have ever seen anyone get electrified. All they know is every chimp stopped them from touching the ladder. Now, this is apocryphal. This never happened. It's not a real thing, which we've talked about in the podcast before. This is social learning, though, in action. And this is exactly what happened with Eloise and her son, and more importantly, for the dental technician and the dentist. It was the meme had passed and now has gained a life of its own. And they will likely pass it on to their friends, even though they don't know why they headbanged to Bohemian Rhapsody. They will likely say it to someone else. It could die out, but it could continue on. I just found that absolutely fascinating that we've got to that next step. Enough time has passed now that it's become, I think, a pure meme. It's become a memetic transfer of knowledge. Ah, I was super excited.
Like saying bless you when someone sneezes, all that sort of stuff that we do culturally but don't really know why we're doing it.
Exactly, yes. You were just told by someone who probably doesn't know why they were told. They know why they were told, but the person who told them, they didn't start it. And it's just been passed down the line as received wisdom from somewhere. I'm interested now, listeners, if there's any other memes, transmission of cultural knowledge that has reached that level for you that you know of, it's so far removed now that you don't know where it comes from, or you found out where it comes from and you had no clue that originally it came from there, because they're definitely around. This is a very modern one it's like in my lifetime. And I just find that, you know, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
You can't microwave oil, Gregoire.
Maybe you can't. How dare you? You're not my dad.
Go on,
I'll do what I like.
Go on.
Why can't I microwave oil?
I think you know the answer to that, Gregoire.
Hang on. Are you saying you can't heat up oil in a microwave because the heating up a microwave requires the agitation of water molecules and oil isn't water?
It's not just water molecules, but
that's true.
Polar molecules.
Yes, true. And also of a certain size. I know what you mean, but that doesn't mean I can't microwave it. Also, I could have a microwave emitter and I could just emit microwaves at oil.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, see, sure, you could microwave oil. It's just not going to get hot, is what you're saying.
No, it's not. No, sorry, it's true. Thank you. Yep.
Here's something that blew my mind. You can't microwave ice.
Processing.
Yeah.
Processing.
It's full of polar molecules.
It is. I've never heard this before. I'm assuming you're not lying, so I'm going to assume it's true. But here's my guess.
Gee, the podcast would have really devolved to the point where I was like, explain this science, motherfucker. And you're like, is it like this? And I'm like, I completely lied. It doesn't work like that at all. Like, we are in trouble if we have hit that level.
To be honest, it feels like our first year where we used to make each other try and answer something really hard and we go, I don't know.
But at least that was a thing that existed. Like, if I start saying, answer this thing really hard and explain why, right, and I've completely made it up and that's not how it works at all. Like, then we're really struggling for drama.
Is it you can't? Yes, polar molecules, it's water. I mean, ice is water. It's just solid water. Is it because of the crystal lattice? It's locked into a solid and therefore they can't. Water has a very, very high specific heat. So to melt water and to turn it into steam takes a butt ton of energy. Like, water's weird. The shape of H2O, when you have two of something coming off something else, the center, in this case, two H coming off an O, normally it's a straight line, but due to quantum effects, which we talked about in the podcast before, water is bent. Water has
it's like a little boomerang.
30 degrees-ish. I can't remember the exact number, but something out there. And that's odd, and that's a quantum thing. And what it means is you get a slight differential of positive and negative from the oxygens and the hydrogen, which means they kind of electromagnetically stick together with other water molecules. The negative side of this molecule gets sexily attracted through science to the positive side of this molecule, and they kind of get bonded together slightly. And that means it's hard to pull them apart if they were just not water. Is that anything to do with it?
Very, very close. Like, you're definitely wandering around the answer there.
Yay!
Because the heat comes from getting the molecules and then spinning them really fast so that they rub up against each other. So it's all friction.
Yeah.
But
all this stuff is, baby.
The water's like trying to warm itself up by like rubbing its hands together.
Mm.
But imagine I super glued your hands together.
Mm.
And you were able to put the same amount of energy in, the same amount of effort in, but your hands just wouldn't rub. And so you're not going to get warm. And that's what happens to ice. The ice, the water molecules in the ice, they can't spin, so they don't rub up against each other, so they don't cause heat. So you stick ice in the microwave and nothing happens despite you running all this energy through it. But when it starts to melt, like when the outside starts to melt, because
just temperature.
Subtropical Queensland, that gets really hot and that melts the rest of the ice.
Yeah, right. I was about to say, be careful, listeners, don't just race off and put my ice in a microwave because it can go horribly wrong very quickly, because you're still going to get melting, not because of the microwave, but just because of the ambient heat from your environment. But if you microwave in a sub-zero environment, if you happen to live in one of those weird countries where you can get like so cold water freezes in the environment and put the microwave outside and put ice in it there, it's not going to melt due to the ambient temperature.
Yeah, in fact, it's just not going to melt.
Defying you.
Yeah.
Oh. Still be careful because there could be, it'd have to be very pure, but there could be pockets of water inside the ice and then suddenly you've got a grenade. Be careful. I don't know if it's 100% that could actually happen, but I know that anytime you say microwave something with water in it, it can explode. And when you open it up and you take a face full of hot water, just be careful, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm.
Potentially.
We eat a lot of, we freeze a lot of soup and it takes forever to get it ready.
Sorry, can I just point out, we both remember Wayne's World and we freeze a lot of soup. We are we have reached a certain age.
Do the kids not eat soup these days?
Well,
I still have my teeth. Like, I don't have to. It's not just purely soup. I can eat a steak.
Okay,
nice meal.
It is. No, it's not the eating of the soup. It's the freezing of the soup, I think. It just implies that you're of a certain age.
I just make a lot of soup.
Yeah,
there's no point making two bowls of soup. It's the same amount of effort to make a whole vat of it. I'm young. I'm hip. I use words like hip.
That's right. And vat and soup. Sorry.
Wait, do the kids not call it soup anymore? Am I that out of touch?
We've gone well off the
Is it Riz juice now?
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah. I upset my niece last night by using the word skibbity. She's 14 years old. I have never seen a kid freak out that her very uncool uncle just said skibbity Riz.
Skibbity. Is that like the toilet?
I'll be honest, I don't know what it means, but I know that people say it probably ironically more than anything else, but the fact that I knew enough to say it.
Sounds like it's from the 70s originally.
It's very new. It's very, very new.
Skibbity bop.
Skibbity. So it's skibbity. Yeah, Riz as in charisma. So yeah.
I got that.
Don't go there. Just don't. It's not worth it.
Luckily for our listeners, science is ageless.
Like your good old friends, Craig and Dan, and our vats of frozen soup.
It's just another meal. It's not a bowl of Bovril.
Wow, that's
culturally. It's not dripping on toast.
That's true. That's true. I'm saying that. It's very true. Your soup is hip and with it, Dan, and so are you.
Damn straight.
Is that the end of your story?
That's the end of my story. My next one's all about Zimmer frames.
Our listeners may remember that in my day job, when I put on my glasses and take off my underwear, sounds weird. I am a teacher. That came out all wrong.
Wow. Sometimes a little bit of ad-libbing really helps things out. And sometimes it just buries you in a pit of your own digging.
And you go to jail forever. But yes, I am an educator and a science communicator in a real life, not just play one on the podcast. And recently we were learning about the resilience for students. So 21st century skills and students being resilient and how...
To like a shotgun blast?
Sorry?
The resilience is in like to a shotgun blast? No.
Yes, that's right. We're building a stronger...
Boom, buckshot. It only went in 5 mil, Jimmy.
What we do is we take students under a Japanese bridge and we get them to punch into sand and or into rice and into sand and then into rocks and then into glass and then into steel and then they become the iron fist of education.
Gotcha.
And that's how they do it. Emotional resilience and being able to understand things can go wrong and that's okay. It's not whether you're right or wrong, correct or incorrect. It's how you handle it, get more information, or how you deal with it emotionally. You know, like you move on, you pick yourself up, all that sort of good stuff. So it's about being resilient, which I think is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea how there's lots of evidence now that happy students learn better. Which I think is kind of feels obvious, but there's now actual research saying how.
So they're not going to learn faster when you're whacking them with a cane.
No, not particularly. No, you may learn simple facts quickly that way, times tables and things, but you will.
And also not to piss off the teacher. You'll learn that pretty quickly.
Yes, exactly. But you won't. Yes, learning as a lifelong activity. So happy students learn better. Not just students. Happy, everyone's a student, you know, lifelong learning. But happy people learn better than unhappy people. And obviously, if you're curious and interested in the subject, then you learn better than someone who just has to learn it because they were told to. So that ties in the whole concept of we're going to learn trigonometry. You really got to explain why. It could be a stepping stone to something else, but it could also be, you know, you have to understand it. And there's a lot to unpack there for teachers may not understand themselves why they're teaching it. Sometimes because they just get told to teach things. But
I wasn't interested in maths when I was at high school. I was like, I'm going to be an artist.
Mm.
And 6 months out of high school, I found computer graphics and I was like, oh, wow, I can make art by like learning to code. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I had to teach myself trigonometry.
Yeah.
It's rubbish. Yeah. I needed someone there to help. Cos, sine, tan. That make no sense.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's the whole thing. When you are interested in something, then you find it much easier to learn as adults. People pick up things very easily when they're interested in it. But if you're not, it's very hard to teach you. So this is all the background to what I was sort of getting onto. But suddenly this idea came up of this lecture I was at. They suddenly talked about dancing brain and kind of moved on from the dancing brain concept. And it stuck with me. And I've done some research into it. I find this really, really interesting. So the concept of the dancing brain is you're not like a little person inside your head that's pulling a big machinery and running it around. There is no mind, body, separation. You're one unit, right? We talked about the podcast before about if you fake smile, in the end, your brain goes, I must be smiling for a reason. Therefore, I'll be happier. Yeah. So there's feedback loops.
And also, I always find it interesting that there are people who are like, oh, yeah, I feel like I'm a little dude who's controlling a body.
Mm.
And I'm like, I feel like I'm a body and there's a little dude controlling me. Slightly different, but important distinction. Also, it means I'm not actually responsible for any of that. That guy's the problem.
Yeah. And I think there's use also to be able to get over things or to move through things is to dissociate. But that's also dangerous. But anyway, that's a whole psychology podcast. That's not ours.
That's what he said.
Yes. So the idea of the dancing.
I think that's a joke.
I think that's a joke. Yes. So the idea of the dancing brain is that dancing is very joy-inducing and it's very much part of the human experience. So from an anthropological, every society dances and dancing is a very important part of what we do. Even people with no dancing ability, you can still shuffle around and feel joy from motion. It's motion of a certain sort.
We can leave them behind.
They're no friends of mine. My friends from... Everybody look at your pants. I know it's not. That's not.
Hands?
No, it's hands. It is hands. I only say pants because it comes from The Simpsons. Homer Simpson said pants, and then it became a meme, and it really started irritating people because everyone was seeing, once again, mimetic transfer. Everybody look at your pants. And I know some people would start screaming, it's hands, it's hands. And you go, oh, now I just have to say pants every time because I got a wonderful reaction.
And both of them make no sense.
Yes. The safety dance doesn't make any sense. Like a lot of workplace health and safety, that is still important. All right. We're getting well off topic here. So music is very important to the human condition. Music is in all societies, lots of different sorts of music, mm-hmm. but music itself is very important. And I find this really interesting because I'm not a musical person. That out of all my many strengths, music isn't one of them. I even learned trombone, but it was very much as a kid, but I very much as a exercise in following patterns more so than playing exciting music. And even to this day, I realized I like music, but only in the fact that it's connected to something. For example, I like the KLF, and that's because I got really into Discordianism in my 20s. And so I still find pleasure in that. But people go, oh, if you like KLF, then you'll like this music. And I listen to that and go, oh, yeah, it's fine.
I was chatting to a friend of mine this morning, and he said, oh, I'm a bit tired. I stayed up late last night listening to music. And I'm like, that's not an activity. Like, no one sits and just listens to music. They have music on while they're doing a real activity.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but some people do.
Sounds so cultured just to sit and listen to some music.
Yeah, but people do. So, yeah, I'm glad. So we all interact with music in a different way. But music is a big part of the brain, and it's lots of connections between physicists being musicians as well. I'm not, but you hear about physicists and scientists maybe also musicians because there's patterns and things. But the idea is that with the dancing brain is that music with a beats per minute. Well, hang on. Wait. I've sort of jumped around a bit.
That's all dancing really is. I just jumped around a bit.
There is a formula which made me very, very happy to work
that's
out.
That's very on-brained.
I was like so excited. There's a formula.
I've broken this piece of human art and endeavor down into numbers, and it's lovely.
I know.
It finally fits in my head.
It does. Look, shut up, and it's true. As you've hit it on the head, and shut up. How dare you, and you're right. The idea is
wonderfully reductive.
It makes sense. Things make sense. Be quiet now. Stop being correct. There is a formula because of dancing brain theory about how much a song will be uplifting or not, that you can plug in certain variables and come up with a number that tells you if that song is uplifting or not uplifting, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
So I just love this. The formula is the number of positive lyrical elements in a song and divide that by how much a song deviates from 150 beats per minute and if it's a major key or minor key. So it's number of positive lyrical elements. So that can be words or phrases in a song. And then divided by beats per minute, 150 minus beats per minute, but the total deviation. So it doesn't make it if it's positive or minus, it's a number. And if it's a positive key, it's plus zero. And if it's a minor key, it's plus one. And so you plug all those numbers in and you get a number. And the higher that number is, the more uplifting that song actually will be.
So you could do a song in the minor key that's really slow, but if all of the concepts in it are like, everything's great, you're great, life is great, aren't puppies adorable?
Yes. It's very close to 150 beats per minute.
All right. So it can't be too slow.
No, but because minor key doesn't equal slowness.
If you slow it down, it's going to get less.
Yes, it will.
Upbeat.
That's right. You have to. Yes,
but
exactly.
Couldn't you just increase the amount of joyous things you're singing about?
I guess you could.
Surely,
yes,
there must be a limit.
You'd have to graph it. That would become a graph to work out. In the end, you'd start getting.
There would have
returns.
To be the fall off.
Yes, exactly right. There'd be a plateauing at the very least where it wouldn't get any more uplifting because in the end it would just, or it would, but very,
diminishing
very
returns.
That's the one.
That's the word phrase I'm looking for.
This formula is just the best. And
because you get all these wonderful songs that are like real peppy and real, real fun and poppy, but they're like real dark when you listen to the lyrics.
That can still be uplifting. So
if you want to destroy my sweater. Pull this thread as I walk away. Oh, so heartbreaking.
And And also, but you still go, oh, it's uplifting because it's got a high beat per minute. It's in a major key, but you're dividing it by the little negative things that are being said.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter in the end. So beats per minute is a tempo of the song. So tempo of about 140 to 150 beats per minute, which is quite fast.
It's real fast.
Yeah, it is. So why 140 to 150? The theory is that this aligns with the average human heart rate during light to moderate exercise, which gives that feeling like you're doing something physically. You've pushed yourself slightly, not massively, but
you've
pulled
up your energy.
Yes, that's right.
To match it.
I did some research. Uptown Funk is about 115 beats per minute. So by Mark Ronson's, and is that Bruno Mars? Bruno Mars? Oh, no, wait.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the Uptown Funk, going to give it to you. We can't sing it because, you know, A, can't sing, and B, we'll get sued.
And also, I'm just not familiar with all this new music. No, no, no. I take my soup and I listen to some Huey Lewis and the News. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, we'll go there. Huey Lewis and the News.
I think it's very reflective of the times that he's now just called Huey Lewis. Well, there's nothing new about him at all.
And the Olds eating soup. So Happy by Pharrell Williams. So I'm happy. Da, 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 da. That's 160 beats per minute, slightly too fast. So major keys. So tonality is important. Major key is normally considered in Western culture very positive. Negative is, minor key. You say negative. Minor key is normally considered not so exciting. And obviously positive lyrics. So something like old people music, Don't Stop Me Now, so by Queen, is 156 beats per minute. So that almost fits perfectly into the number. And the other one is Dancing Queen is 100 beats per minute. So Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go is 152 beats per minute. So that's that can fit.
What does a higher number mean? That it's
the higher number.
More positive associations. Or?
Yes. So,
About lovely ballads and stuff? What about Sinead O'Connor's? Like
nothing compares.
Yeah, nothing compares. Like that's gorgeous song. It's very sad, but it's a beloved song. So what's the upshot of the number? What can you use the number for?
Right. Yes. By having suitable tempo and a major key and positive lyrics is more likely to create in listeners that they will feel happy and want to dance along with it and be more open to learning or be actually enjoy their day more by actually, you know, having this music playing. That music will normally kick in things like the different parts of the brain will be activated from the motor cortex and to the reward centers. All of them will kind of get this boost because you are feeling happier due to listening to the music. Once again, the music can invoke in your brain a positive state. The closer it is to 150 beats per minute, the more likely it is that it's going to be considered a positive music, which I think is really interesting. It doesn't have to be 150, but these are things to come in. So basically it comes down to the dancing brain is looking for positive songs or positive lyrics at a closest to 150 beats per minute as possible in a major key. And you're going to activate the brain in a very positive way, which a lot of us will feel. And you can probably use that to, if you're going to write a hit song that you want to be really poppy, you could reverse engineer it so that your song fits perfectly into this formula.
Well, that's the problem with the music charts these days is that we have corporations. We have people dedicated to the science of making these hit songs. And now all the hit songs sound and look identical. I was just talking about this with my brother this morning. Back in the 70s, like 35% of really popular songs were single celebrity types. Hmm. And the rest were bands. And now there's no bands in the top 40. It's not about a band of people who are all pulling together. It's about a single celebrity entity being pitched by the celebrity machine.
Sure.
It's garbage. It's garbage. Burn it all down.
Well, that's silly. That's a silly way of looking at it. In the 70s, there wasn't a machine. You'd get a couple of albums a year, but nowadays people can produce albums all the time. Music, there's so many more people producing so much more music. It's harder to break through, but there's a lot more types of music out there, and there's certain ones that are popularized in certain areas, but it's not, I don't think it's all just Taylor Swift. I mean, you can get all the genres now. You can find someone doing what you like. You're just not going to probably hear it on mainstream radio.
That's what I'm saying, is that like the pop machine that's mass promoting this stuff to the masses, and people are missing out on the eclectic indie experience. What music's all about, the passion of it. It's all not, reduced but, to numbers. No, and it's just a gun that they built to fire into your nervous system and go, boom, there's your serotonin bullet.
How dare they make you feel happy? How dare they create a song that makes you feel good about yourself? Get Katy Perry on the line straight away, and I'm going to yell at her for writing Roar as an uplifting anthem for young people, mainly women everywhere. What a monster. What a friggin' monster.
I mean, if you're following the Katy Perry news, she's released a new song called Woman's World, which is a feminist anthem. The video clip has obviously been created by six lecherous old men. One of them is the guy who sexually assaulted Keisha. So,
oh no,
yeah.
Oh,
dear. So her fans are not happy about that.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine. There is definitely mathematics in music, and there's definitely, or at least the same reason that we find maths interesting and we can use maths in our brain seem to activate certain parts of our brain with music, and it's the mathematical levels of music can also, as you said, can be weaponized, can be, but you can work out if a song is going to uplift you more on average using nothing but good old maths.
We need the punks to come back. What happened to the punks?
Well, if you had like, let's Anarchy in the UK. So hang on. I'm looking up BPM, Anarchy in the UK. 134 beats per minute. So it's pretty fast. And now it's probably going to have not a lot of, positive lyrics.
I don't know about that. It all depends on your point of view.
It does. It really does, doesn't it? So if you like the Queen and that stuff, then yeah, sure, it's negative. But if you're like, I want to break everything down, that could be positive.
If you're kind of big into heroin.
Sure. So Anarchy in the UK, is it a major key? Hang on. I'm guessing it must be. Major.
It might just be power chords all the way through.
Well, it's C major. So you're going to have positive lyrics, 134. So it's 16 plus zero. So whatever your positive lyrics divided by 16 is going to be your.
This is not punk. Don't.
It's positive, though. It's a positive thing. There you go.
That's why it worked, though.
You've just picked it. Because punk is a human experience, and you kind of go, you can't escape the fact that you're a human being sitting inside a human brain, and there's a strata that your brain works to. Even with
the hypocrisy of me being told this by Gregoire.
We're all part of the machine, man. The Matrix is all around us at all time. Even punk is part of the control system. I'm just saying. Welcome to the meeting under the bridge at midnight. Join us then.
Can we somehow punkify punk? Can we make like super punk? That sounds like pop. That sounds like a pop band.
Are you saying that Taylor Swift is the punkest of punks? Careful, steady. We cannot fight the Swifties. Don't do this to us.
Taylor Swift is a
billionaire.
Is an entity. It's a corporate entity. She's not even a real person. She's just the face of a wicked, evil corporate entity.
No.
And like all billionaires, she should be eaten.
Look, I did disagree with the last part. Here at Smarter for Better, we don't hate the Swifties or Taylor Swift. Please don't find our homes and kill us. Thank you very much.
You are being manipulated.
Oh, but that's definitely true.
So I had a lovely meal recently, Gregoire.
Was it frozen soup?
It was not.
Oh, sorry.
It was not. I microwaved a plastic container. The plastic container had bisphenol A in it to heat up the food within. I grabbed an aluminium can of 1930s Coca-Cola. I poured the drink into a glass with a crack in it. And then my meal into my radium-induced glow-in-the-dark bowl. I then tucked in using my lead-contaminated sterling silverware. And you know what I realized, Gregoire? Do you know what I realized?
What's that?
I don't remember, for what I assume are unrelated reasons. But some would say that there are products that are a lot safer to eat from. Into the wonder product, food safe silicone.
Okay.
I've got a silicone ice cube tray. It's easy to pop the cubes out. I've got silicone storage containers that I can throw in the microwave. I've got a silicone mat that goes into my oven and replaces the need for baking paper. It's a wonder product. And unlike plastic, glass, lead, radium, and aluminium, surely it's safe to use in the kitchen. Surely. So, first misconception. It's not silicon. It's silicone.
Right.
So, silicon is an element that you get by melting sand or quartz.
It's sand, I was about to say.
Yeah.
I thought you'd just gone totally Stone Age. I thought you're like, we're going back. I cook everything on a rock and eat with rock. Eat with rocks.
Fork. No prongs.
No teeth either. Sad.
Kill meal with fork.
Well, is it a fork? I guess it's a stone trident at that point. If you're lobbing a rock at someone.
No prongs, not trident.
No prongs, sorry.
Monotrent. Monodent.
A monodent, which is also, once you put the rock in your face, is what you've got as well in your mouth.
Yeah. You do get silicon for this.
Mm-hmm.
You grind it into a powder and you mix it with methyl chloride.
Because silicon is plastic. No, silicone, sorry, is plastic.
It's not plastic.
It's not plastic.
No, plastic's like petroleum stuff.
Oh, okay. So silicone then?
You grind up silicon.
Yes.
You mix it with methyl chloride. This brings oxygen into the equation, making silica. Then additional chemicals are added to create the rubbery substance we all know and love. There is no bisphenol A in it, only additional hydrogen and carbon.
Ooh.
So you've got silica, oxygen, hydrogen, carbon. That's all that's in there. It is quite stable at standard oven temperatures and won't degrade for over 10,000 hours at temperatures of 500 degrees Fahrenheit or approximately 480 kelvins.
Yeah.
So happy.
So 400, minus 273. There you go. To get the Celsius, degrees Celsius, everyone. What would you say, 200 and what was it? 200 and no, 400.
480 kelvins.
Okay. So it would look roughly make it four. Yeah, sure.
Oven temperature.
200 Celsius, roughly. Not quite.
Yeah. Or exactly 200 Celsius if you're using a Celsius oven and you turn it to 200.
Sure.
But, you know, oven temperature.
Sure.
Silicone is an excellent insulator. And if you're wearing silicone gloves, you can plunge them into boiling water. Just don't dip them deeper than the gloves are long. That would be a mistake.
True.
It's non-stick. No more scraping pizza cheese off the tray. You just peel it back and everything goes with it. Much less food wastage.
Ooh.
I've got a little, like one that's perfectly cut for one of my pots that I do rice in. And instead of having like 3/4 of a cup of rice stuck to the bottom of the pan, it just all comes out now. I'm wasting so much less food.
That's very cool. That is very cool.
It's non-porous and non-toxic, so it doesn't leach into food. And if it did, you'd still be fine because it's not toxic. Take that, Teflon.
It's just sand. You just got some sand in you. You're cool. You've always got sand in it somewhere. Like, you know, it's all good.
It's more eco-friendly than plastic. No dinosaurs had to die to get this substance. You just dig quartz or sand out of the ground and you're golden. Asterix. We are running out of good quality sand, though most of that's use goes into concrete, which you should replace with styrofoam, which is a fossil fuel derived plastic. So swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, listeners. Yeah. I was about to say, yes, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of silica. There's a lot of silica in planet Earth. Like, it's not, we're not running out of that. It's the most common element. Silicon is the most common element.
Oh, we are running out of good, like, sand that we can use in concrete.
Sand is a different thing, though. I'm just talking about, yes, if you can take a rock and grind it down and get silicon from it, that's fine.
Well, the sand that comes up on the beach from the water is quartz, little tiny grains of quartz mostly. And it has, but it's dissolved in a particular way in the water, which makes it great for as a binder in concrete. Whereas the sand in the desert has been smoothed by the wind. And so it's like smooth and shiny, and so it doesn't bond into concrete properly. So your concrete isn't the best quality then.
But you don't want that. You're not using that for talking about.
But there's a lot of sand in the desert, qualities. But you can't use it.
But hang on, you can't use it for making silica.
For either of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
No,
it can't be. It can't. Why? If you need it for, you're not.
Because you're melting it down.
Yeah, you're just
grinding it into dust.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Maybe there's something about the Maybe in the ocean, the quartz comes out and is filtered out, whereas in the desert, it's a... In the desert... Yes, sorry, that's right. I did read this. In the desert, it's a mix of clays and quartz and stuff, yeah, so you don't get pure...
So yeah, you have to do more mixing of... Yeah, sure. That's fair enough. And also, because it's not... I just looked this up. It's 27.7% of the Earth crust by mass, silicon. So it's the second one after oxygen, but it's not normally by itself. Normally, it's an oxide. It comes as silica. So as silicates, so sand, quartz, rock quartz, amethyst, agate, flint, and opal. It's still an oxide, but you said you needed to use silica. I'm interested by that. It just seems odd that we have to use the stuff that, I mean, sand, as you said, is just rounded off. Beach sand, whatever, is just rounded off. I don't know why you need that.
It gets rid of the clays and the other impurities. Yeah. So you end up with, because the quartz doesn't leach into the water like all the other things. And so you end up with a better quality of quartz sand, whereas in the deserts, it's kind of more of a mix of everything.
I can see that, but surely you could do a chemical process. I mean, mentally, that's a problem itself, but you could get rid of the clays.
Oh, you could. It's just
filter it out.
I imagine it's much
more expensive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If expense is your problem, then yes, this is a problem. Capitalism, baby.
Well, it's not the only problem.
Oh, damn it.
Silicone does not biodegrade very well. It's such a cool material that it simply resists the normal environment. So sunlight comes along and it's like, fungi tries to grow through it. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
You could heat the earth up by several degrees and it would still be fine. It has a high degree of stability against light exposure. It can take between 50 and 500 years to break down naturally. But if you expose it to saline, it can become brittle. I couldn't find anything about the reaction between saline and silicon other than this particular line of information on the web, because it turns out that silicone and saline are the two popular types of breast implant. So when I used a search engine, I kept getting distracted. So I never found out anything more. You can recycle silicone, but each time you do, it's downgraded. So the old kitchenware could end up becoming industrial lubricant. Unlike plastic that becomes dangerous microbeads, it eventually just turns back into basic elements, though.
Okay.
So is it going to turn out to be bad for us? Possibly.
Okay. Of course.
It's so useful and such a wonder product that narratively it does feel like the kind of thing that in 20 years' time turns out to wipe out sperm count or something.
That's right, yeah. It'll milkshake duck us, or we'll milkshake duck it, or we'll be like, and we're out.
The LFGB is the European Food Code. It's just like the FDA, except it's harder to pay off the inspectors. Health Canada and the department that enforces the European Food Code seem to be pretty certain that silicone is fine. It's just bonded silicon, basically sand and rock. It doesn't react with food nor give off dangerous or any other type of fumes. It's considered safe for contact. It doesn't stain. But you must get food-grade silicon. All sorts of toxic chemicals and oils are used in silicone for building. That goo that you fix gaps with in your bathroom, don't drink it.
Good advice from your friend Dan. I just want to reinforce that. Any goo you find in the bathroom, don't drink or eat it. I think any bathroom goo is not just this one, any of them.
Sunscreen?
I don't think there's any good bathroom goo that you should be ingesting in any way, shape, or form.
Moisturizer? Don't do it.
Don't do it. Soap? Nah. Perfumes? Definitely not. Water? That's not goo. That's gooiness. It has a goo factor of zero. There's nothing in there. Any of your bodily wastes? Don't eat them or drink them.
We don't want to shame you. Maybe that's your thing.
If you want to do it because that's your yum, that's fine. But we're here to tell you that biologically is not going to help you. It may help you in your subgroup punk fetish society, but
boy, this public warning message has gone real niche. The quality of food grade silicone is important. Research suggests that if it's not heat cured correctly, siloxanes can off gas siloxides at oven temperatures.
Okay.
If you're worried about this sort of stuff, you can put these silicone items in the oven at 200 degrees for 4 hours. You don't want siloxides in your system because they can break down small enough to accumulate in your body. They are not toxic, but like all things but pizza, you want as little of them in your body as possible. Ladies.
but maybe, has it been tested, maybe this stuff will fight the microplastics.
No, no, it's inert. No.
Damn it. I was just hoping for like, da 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 da, like in your bowels, you know, just like a full on.
That's Vulcans. Don't want Vulcans in your bowels. I mean, again, we don't want to yuck your yum.
Have you seen Strange New World? Maybe. No, I'll stop speaking now.
Thank goodness. Don't heat the silicone past the temperature of standard baking. It is hard to set on fire, but if you heat it to 500 degrees Celsius, it'll catch fire and be hard to put out. Now, if you don't have food-grade silicone, you can use medical-grade silicone, which is an even higher quality. So ooh, if you have a spare breast implant or a sex toy, you can eat off that too.
Nice. Make some excellent Pop-Tarts. Not Pop-Tarts. Icy Poles.
Yes. Yes, I suppose you could.
Yeah. I feel that there's a whole Smarter to Better product range coming here. Not about sex toys, but though, why not? You know, but are you trying to promote like some sort of cookware thing and sex toy range?
Man, like there must be ice lolly style molds for penises.
There must be. Right? I mean, have you gone to a hen's night? Surely there must be ice pole penis shaped molds. Get in contact with your good friend Dan at dan@smartenough.org. Send him photos.
Yay! Wait, what did I just yay to? One of the researchers for the study that I looked at, I actually reached out to her. I sent her an email.
Yep.
Because I wanted to say, hey, you found out that these things are off gas and stuff. Like they weigh it and then they stick it in an oven and then they weigh it again and they're like, hey, this is lighter, so something has left.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So absolutely, that could be a problem. That's the heat curing stuff.
Yeah.
But I asked, does she use these products? And she didn't answer that question. But she said that they're safe as long as it's good quality and is used correctly.
Right.
It's recommended first time you use it, heat it up first. But she's continuing to investigate. That's what we like about our scientists.
They're not going to come out and say, yeah, absolutely, you should lick it and put your babies in it and roll it, you know, roll around all the time, stick it in every orifice. Because if something goes wrong, it's real bad. What they can say is, at this point in time, everything seems great. Yeah. And we will continue. We'll get back to you if something
goes terribly wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, so about your sperm count, we may have solved that problem.
That's right. Well, that'd be her thing going, I've discovered absolutely no reduction in my sperm count.
Yeah.
And you're like, great. Wait a minute.
So thank you very much to Dr. Esther Asensio. You just reach out to scientists and they're like, yeah, oh my God, you like my stuff? Yeah, because your stuff is awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Did you tell it was for a podcast?
Yeah. Told her it was for a stupid podcast.
Oh, don't be like that.
Yeah. I told her it was for our intellectual podcast. Welcome to the Walk of Shame, where I don't have any walks of shame for Greg, and surprisingly, he's got another one for me.
I do. I must have sounded really pathetic recently because when I was like, please send me something. I'm so sad. People are like, yes, we will line up and we will bring Dan down. So thank you much. This is Sue Tom.
Is this a clutching at straws walk of shame?
No, this is a good one.
Is this a pity walk of shame for Greg? It was like, oh, Dan mispronounced something. Guess I'll give Greg this one.
Look, you can make up your own mind when I tell you about it, which will be right now.
All right.
So in episode 212, at the 1 hour, 37 minute and 48 second mark. Oh, I like precision.
Jeez, that's a long podcast. That is a long episode.
That's when your brain absolutely gave up. Dan says, yummy, yummy prions when discussing eating ass meat. I would have said ass meat, so I'm just reading from right here.
Right, human ass meat.
Human ass meat, exactly right. Yeah. Now, of course, that was in the idea, of course, of...
You don't want to be a cannibal because then you would eat prions and you would get mad cow disease, but for humans, which is called like Lutz-Kreitzmacher disease or something.
Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
That's the one, thank you.
CJD. And I only know that because I look down because Tom very nicely writes it further down.
Excellent. All right.
But Tom says, you need to be in contact with a high-risk area of the body to ingest prions. For those who don't know, prions are proteins. They're not living things. They're proteins that link to your cells that take up the space of another protein that should be there and causes a lot of problems because your body goes
wrong or something. Aren't
yeah,
they?
That's right. And so it makes your body go, oh, okay, I'll follow this instruction, which is real bad. And it's like, cause it misreads this thing basically and starts messing you up. So you need to be in contact with a high risk area of the body to ingest prions. The brain is obviously high risk. Also spinal cords, cranial nerves, specifically the optical nerves, pituitary glands and tonsillar material. Additionally, there is an elevated risk for material in contact with cerebrospinal fluid, the fluid in which the brain is bathed. The ass is not a high risk area in the context of prions. Dan is free to eat as much ass as he likes with basically no fear of getting variant or non-variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD.
Thank you, Tom.
Note.
Thank you for telling me I'm allowed to go and eat ass.
Note, depending on the ass, he may be at an increased risk of cholera, E. coli, norovirus, dysentery, giardia, salmonella, hookworm, ringworm, tapeworm, but Tom is not here to kink shame anyone, Dan.
Oh, right.
Thanks,
you've
Tom.
Slid nicely into this episode, Tom.
I thank you very much, Tom, for that one. Oh, I love it. This is such a wonderful enough. So yes, you can eat as much ass as you want, Dan. No one's going to stop you.
Great. One person might try to stop me at a time. If you hear either of us make a mistake, if you hear Greg make a mistake, send an email to dan@smartenough.org.
And I'm sure in this one I've made, I'm thinking back going, oh. Anyway, we'll see.
You have been listening to dan@smartenough.org.
Also greg@smartenough.org.
Get along to the website where you can subscribe to the podcast just in case you're just listening to this as a one-off and you kind of missed a bunch and you're like, I want my app to serve it up to me so it reminds me when it, and tells me whenever it's ready, which we say is the third Sunday of every month, but actually tends to be closer to the fourth or fifth Sunday of every month.
That's right. We get there. We do it. We never miss one.
So never missed one yet.
In 12, 13 years. It's all fine. If you are just jumping on board, I hope you enjoyed it. And just say, yeah, I hope you come back because, good Lord, we'd love to see you.
And I hope you give us money, which you can do by signing up to our Patreon account. Second level Patreons pay $5 US and they get named on the podcast and we thank them very much. Big thank you to Britta Rogoski, Ivan, Andrew Whitehurst, Matt Ewers, Avi Greenbury, Steve Stewart, Catherine Cook, Mariana Scott, Andrew Trousdale, Liz Y, Ilana Mitchell, Andrew Potts, Gary Heather, Matthew Toy, Lindsay Jenkinson and Gronya Maguire. Thank you all so much for being tier 2 members of the Patreon.
We don't talk about the lower level, the first level.
The pleb level.
Yes, but there's a lot more of those recently and not to a reduction of the other ones either. There's been actually an increase of those people, which is thank you very much. I know we don't name you, but that's really kind of you. Thank you very much for coming on board and supporting us with 2 of your human dollars.
Then there's also the tier 3s and we don't like them at all. They are obviously bad decision makers.
Yeah, it's true.
And for their sins and for my sins, possibly, I insult them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got a new tier 3 member just recently, Rick Le Puedevin.
Oh, yes.
And he was very pleased with his insult last episode. Oh, and he fantastic. Said, oh, and you did a pretty good job of my name too. And I read that with a tone. And I am getting kind of sick of all the people whose names I read out going, oh, yeah, like the passive aggressive, almost got it right this. I don't like that. I'm good at this job. Like, if your name isn't quite right, that's a problem with your name, not with me, Sunshine. And I'll show you just how good I am with, like, difficult pronunciations and stuff. All of these insults are French insults. So, Steve Eichenhout, vu est homme d'une grotesque ardeur et une collision avec chaque bâton comme votre descendu. You look a little bit baffled there, Greg. I reckon you can get some of these.
I don't speak French.
You don't speak French, but I reckon you get some because there's a grotesque ardeur.
Oh, yes. Would be, yeah, okay, yes. A grotesque udder?
Arbor, like Arbor Day.
Oh, you're an ugly tree?
Ugly tree. Un collision avec bâton.
You hit every branch on the ugly tree when you fell out of it.
Boom! There you go. Like there you go. Easy. Tom Siri. l'intérieur de votre tête, il est une cellule, c'est solitaire. So, l'intérieur.
Something about I heard derrière.
Interior.
Nope.
Interior. It's basically English.
Is it?
Interior.
I don't speak that either.
So exterior.
Interior. I see. Right. Okay. Right.
De votre tête.
Got it. Understood. Right. Phew. Okay.
De tête.
That's 20 inside. Is it votre tête 20?
Tête.
Oh, no.
Tête.
No. Oh, this is going to be very painful.
Tête.
I don't know.
Mon tête.
Ted. Oh, okay. There you go. Okay. Really? Is it? Great.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, you don't recognize tête. Okay. That's all right. You don't speak French. You're doing very well. So, l'intérieur de votre tête, il est une cellule.
So you're an empty head. You're an empty headed person. Your head is empty. The interior of your head has got nothing in it.
Une? Non, n'est pas zéro.
There's one something. Une
cellule.
Yep. Une?
C'est solitaire.
So your empty head has no thoughts?
Oh,
you haven't got a singular thought in your head. You have one thought in your head. You can only think one thought at a time.
It's very close and you're very close. Not close enough, but very close.
Okay, great.
And finally, Rick Lepredevin. We'll see whether you get a handle this one. Rick Lepredevin. Right, cool. Ta mère est un hamster et ton père sont des elderberry.
Sure. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries.
Ah, tu parles français.
I can speak racist French, so.
And a big thank you to our other Tier 3 members, Morden O'Hare, Eric Wilson, Scott Driscoll, Joey Wesley, Michael Barnes, and Al Batson. They are my, how do you say, I don't know what. Thank you all so much for supporting the podcast, everyone.
Thank you very much. And putting up with my terrible, that's the other thing I'm not good at. Music is one of them. And other languages, English has colonized my brain. And
just like everything else.
Yes, that's right.
The English are good at colonizing.
I love travel. I love going anywhere. And I make sure I don't do this, but I have almost zero capacity for language learning. I'm so bad at it. I must admit, I seem to have a lot of heritage from my English side of just talking very loudly at people and hoping the language penetrates into the English section of their head.
I'm just good at mime.
I just hope that they go, we want to make sure that mentally handicapped man gets the help he requires in our country, which is, you know, progressive and wonderful.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's it.
And as we always like to say,
je ne parle français. Je ne parle, I can't even speak français. God damn it. Je ne parle français. Is that it? Is that the one? I can't. How can you say you don't speak French? How can you not say I can't speak French in French? Oh, that's not good.
Je ne parle français.
It is je ne parle français.
Je ne parle. I do not parle. Right. Français.
Je ne parle français. Je ne parle français. No. Or as I would normally do it, I do not speak French.
Ooh la la.
Everyone's like, oh my God, it's Friday. Oh, it's Wednesday. Only two more days to Friday. Mm. Oh no, it's Monday. This feels like wasting your life. I hope my life ends faster so
wishing
I can get
your
to
life
this point.
Away.
Yeah. Oh, I hope I can get to that thing quickly so I can have a good time that'll be over real quickly and then I'll be dead. And you're like, maybe make your Thursdays better?
Yeah.
The Olympics opening, you know, opening ceremony. Watch one bit of it. I adore the French for one thing. They're like, you know, 200 and something years ago, we killed our aristocrats. Like we killed them. We killed them hard. We're not going to apologize for that. And we're not going to forget it. In fact, we're going to point it out at our Olympic Games in 2024. So they had Marie Antoinette holding her own head, singing, "It's going to be all right." It's supposedly it's a revolutionary song and about how we get to kill the aristocrats. And then a death metal band sings the same song, but a death metal version. And it ends with red streamers being fired off the front. And you're like, I adore people like, hey, leaders, remember, f*** with us and we'll cut your f***ing head off. Like, we've done it before and we will do it again. All right. Everyone understand this? Yay for the Olympics.
This voting
Yay.
Thing, this democracy thing, that's yeah. pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Guy, isn't that nice and non-violent?
Yeah. Just like, remember, at any moment we could turn on you. And we will.
In America, they've got some politicians saying, "Oh, maybe only certain people should have a vote." Like I'm sure there are French people just there going, "Oh, I don't think you want to try for that again, sunshine. You should.
All right.
You should
All
try
right.
and have a look at the translation of their national anthem.
All right.
It is graphic and violent."
See, the Americans have the same thing about, you know, the whole, you know, the Star Spangled Banner is quite about war and rockets and, but it doesn't.
Is it just to go Star Spangled Banner? We'll have a banner of fun. That's
banner
that's
of
it,
stars.
Right?
Yeah. We'll have a banner of stars. Sorry. I get the last word wrong. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's it. That's the one. I always hear it and they play the ball, footballs. Think of countries as kids in a classroom. America is the big kid and the successful, powerful kid. And you're like, and his dad's real strong and he's strong and she's strong. Like they're strong and they could mess you up, but you're pretty certain you could talk them down. France is the weird guy at the back who is just like grinning a lot. Lovely. A lovely guy, like really lovely. But you know that this kid will have you. Like there's just something about them. They're like, if you.
France is Christian Slater in Heathers.
Oh, I think that's who I was thinking of before you. Like, I think that's what my brain was trying to make in my head.
Yep.
My God, Christian Slater may be the embodiment of France, the Frenchness in America. Weird.
I had an interesting experience yesterday. We were lining up to get coffee down at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
My four-year-old daughter came up next to me and sort of snuggled into my leg. And I'm like, wait a second, I don't have a four-year-old daughter. And I looked over and got her mother's attention and was like, she thinks I'm her dad. And her dad's nowhere around. And so this mother is like, Rochelle, do you realize that's not your dad? And this kid looks up and just like, oh, God.
I've made a terrible error.
Like sticks a head in her hands and absolute shame.
Lovely dog, you know, it's fine. And she's like, he doesn't go up to anyone. I get that sometimes. This dog's just like, you're the best. I was like, yep. We understand each other, dog. It's all fine.
I smell a little more like meat than a lot of my peers.
I just didn't want to walk off into the dark and steal her dog.
Yeah. And also, you don't necessarily want to interact with it when you don't know. Like, a strange dog is a strange dog.
Yeah. For me, in that case, it's more, I wasn't worried about being bitten by the dog. It's more, I find the owners get weird when you start going, who's a woogoo woogoo or whatever, because
you didn't
ask permission to talk to their dog.
There is a sense of requiring permission.
Yeah. Same as kids, I guess. You wouldn't just walk up to someone's kid.
It's like, you want to sit on my lap?
Yeah. That's right. Hey, kid.
Totally platonic.
That's right. I got a cool van. Do you want to see it?
Me? I'm a candy salesman.
I have an unmarked van emporium. That's what.
Do you Imagine if you sold unmarked vans, but you had like advertising down the side of your van going, unmarked vans.
This isn't one of them. This is just the ad for the unmarked.
Come this down is my to car. This yeah, is yeah. The business van car. I sell unmarked van. Not even this model. Really?
I bought this from a marked van salesman.
Yes.
So I could sell my unmarked vans.
Yes. I wish I'd been able to go with my own vans, but yeah, what can you do?
They're much better because I used to use my own vans, and then the CIA got really angry at me for showing off the vans that they allegedly buy from me and use.
But it's for the best because now I don't look like a pedo.
Da 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 da. There it is. Good times.
We have fun.
Oh, like GIF and GIF. And they said GIF, which upset the other person. And they were like, oh, yeah, I just say it to annoy people. Then he came and said, but more importantly, I call them pedophiles. Pedophiles, sorry.
Pedophiles.
So if you'd like, I can send you this unmarked USB, which has lots and lots of great pedophiles on it. And the person they're talking to was like, please stop saying that. Please stop saying it. No, that's what they are. They're pedophiles. And I know that you like pedophiles and you told me to send as much information about pedophiles as possible. It's like, please stop saying these things. This is the best thing in the world. PDFs.
But I mean, he's not saying the format. Like it's a, what is it? Personal document format?
Yes. It was after I listened to it. When I stopped giggling, I went, wait, that doesn't work. As you said, it's format. It's not files. But if you don't know, it could be PDF files.
This is an ATM machine, but backwards. It's like if ATM, the machine meant something else.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Automatic transaction of money machine. Yeah. Oh, it's an ATM machine.
Well, I feel like I told this before. My mother used to call them automatic ATM machines. And you sit there and just go, Like, oh, it's the automatic ATM machine.
For the transactions?
For the transactions. Well, it doesn't anymore, but I remember it for a long time. She did say automatic ATM machines.
You do that with a lot of them. My personal PIN number.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Cohen anarchy, is important.
Anarchy in the urine? No, I'm sorry. I take that back. I have to.
Good. I'm glad it's been taken back. That's a great episode. That was a fun game, actually.
Yeah. God, I'm so terrible at it.
Oh, look, she's going to listen to what I said, and she's going to be like, why didn't you run this past me?
I was going to ask if you had. Obviously, the answer is no.
I asked her the other day, and she's like, oh, yeah, I can help out. That sounds like fun. And then I just never got around to it. And I'm like, oh, time to do it. She's going to hear it on the podcast, and she's going to be like, you're dead to me. None of that was French. I could not work out what you were saying.